Welcome back to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on 1400 AM, 99.3 FM WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. Special thanks to Marilyn Clark for joining me in the first segment to talk about the work the Smart Zone does in our community. And in this segment, I am joined by Kim Pesey from the Copper Dog 150. This year, you're the race director, right?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Let's talk a little bit about the race itself. It's a brief history, but I guess give us a little bit of historical background on how the race came to be.
Well, I will tell you, this is the sixth year of the Copper Dog 150 and 40 races. And I will tell you, last year they did a real good little segment that's actually available on the website. But basically what happened is some local residents in Calumet saw a local musher, Truman Obermeyer, out one morning. And one of the, actually the owner of Carmelita's, Jerry Mitchell, was looking out his window one day and saw Truman slide by with his dogs, and he and his wife kind of chatted about it, and then they saw him again, and they hooked up and said, hey. And so I think the Copper Dog was kind of born. They started talking to some local people involved in mushing, mushers, and also some people that didn't know anything about a dog race. Some of the founding, I guess I could say founding members of the Copper Dog organization, basically they'll admit to you, they didn't know anything about running a dog race, and we've been learning ever since.
I guess when it first started, how has it evolved from what you've seen? Like, I mean, how many people were involved in it when it first started?
Well, I will tell you, I was not with Copper Dog Organization a year, the very first year, year one. I will say that they had probably a limited amount of people that were running around. I do know I was the checkpoint coordinator last year, and our Copper Harbor checkpoint person is Jill Pretzel, and she was telling me a story that the very first year it was her and her husband standing there writing times down as dogs crossed the line. So it's definitely evolved into a major event versus somebody standing there with a clipboard and a pencil. So they have worked very hard. This organization has really put a lot of effort into make this a class event.
Now, the people that that are involved in this race, the mushers, what kind of skill level are you looking for? I mean, when they sign up and they want to get involved?
I think we're very fortunate because we are a race that offers the potential for an experienced musher and a not so experienced musher. We have two races, both the Copper Dog 150 and the Copper Dog 40. And I think that's one of the things that sets us apart. But also, too, I think the terrain that we run on is very challenging, and I think that's why we're so popular. We offer an event for both the novice musher and the more experienced musher, and I think we've seen that by some of the caliber of mushers that have come to our events.
And where are these mushers coming from?
Well, this year we've got mushers from Minnesota, from Wyoming, from downstate Michigan, from Ontario, Canada. We've got mushers coming from all over the country right now, so we're pretty impressed with that.
In terms of the spectators, I guess, is it mostly the local people that come?
Well, I'm not going to say that. I mean, we've got, I know firsthand, we've got volunteers that live in Wisconsin that come to volunteer for our race and have done so since year one. So I'm not going to say it's just local, but I definitely think that the majority of our volunteers and the majority of the work is definitely made by our local communities.
So let's get into the course itself. I guess not really a specific breakdown, but there are three stages.
For the Copper Dog 150, there are three stages. The first stage goes from Calumet to Eagle Harbor. That happens on Friday night. The second stage happens on Saturday morning. The mushers take off from Eagle Harbor and end up in Copper Harbor in the afternoon. And then on Sunday morning, the mushers wake up and we send them off up over Brockway, back to Calumet.
And I did want to mention, because that night, when it first gets started and everyone's right there in Calumet, it seemed like it's an event in and of itself.
Absolutely. And I think that's another thing that we have to advertise and promote for families and community. If you have not been to the start,
you need to come. Yeah.
You need to come. It is energetic, it's exciting, it's magical, it's just it's full of really positive energy.
One of my favorite parts is that every musher gets to go off on their own theme music,
mm-hmm.
and that's you get some really interesting entries for that. And I believe that was 6:30 on that Friday night.
Actually, they start off going off at 7 o'clock. 6:30 is open ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they start off right at 7 o'clock, going out every 3 minutes. And you're absolutely right. That's one of my favorite things, mm-hmm. is we actually have someone that communicates with the mushers, that gathers those songs, and we say, hey, what do you wanna head down Fifth Street in Calumet to? And it is fun because you get to hear some real fun songs, and it's pretty amazing.
In terms of the course itself, has it pretty much stayed the same, or? You know, has it changed in any way?
I think it's changed. The past several years, it's pretty much remained the same. But once again, I will tell you from what I've learned over the years, the very first race, I think they had, and forgive me because I'm not going to be able to give the exact name of the trails, but I think they had something that I think was referred to the death drop that was up on leg two, I believe. That has been taken out. So
okay, yeah, I'm glad they took that one out.
It definitely is. It's definitely weather dependent. It's trail dependent. It depends if there are any companies that are logging. So there's a lot that goes into trying to find a right trail.
And so every year, in terms of the planning process, is there ever a discussion about, you know, changing the trail or anything? Is that part of the planning of the Copper Dog 150?
Absolutely. It has to be. Our majority of our race is run on snowmobile trails, mm-hmm. or is run on private land. So we have to, as an organization, go to these communities, go to these landowners, and let them know about our race,
what
we need to do. We have to get permission to do that. We just don't plan a race and go where we need to or want to. It's very time-consuming, and there's a lot involved.
From getting the feedback from the mushers, from last year or the year before, is one stage more challenging than the other, would you say?
I think so. I think it depends on a lot of different things. It depends on how you train your dogs. Mm-hmm. One thing that's really, I think, really cool is we have some really talented IT folks that work for, or I should say volunteer for, the Copper Dog organization. And you can actually go on as a musher and go on, look at our trail, and also look at a version of Google Earth elevation.
Okay.
So you can actually see what those elevations are. I would say definitely Copper Harbor, leaving Sunday, you're going straight up over Brockway Mountain. So,
mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing that's kind of cool about our race, is that it's a strategy. The mushers have to plan what dogs they're going to run, how they're going to do it. You know, so it's definitely strategic planning.
You briefly hit on it, and I do want to talk about the weather-wise, because, last year was my first Copper Dog that I was able to cover, and needless to say, it was really, really cold. I won't say it was bad, because the turnout was still very good. What was, I guess, the vibe that you were getting from the mushers, I guess, beforehand? Because they kind of knew what they were getting into.
Oh, absolutely, and you have to remember that these mushers train in the wintertime. The dogs train in the wintertime. Some of these mushers, well, the year before, we had mushers from Alaska,
mm-hmm.
you know. So the weather definitely plays a part, but, you know, we have our motto has always been happy, healthy dogs, and that's one of the first things. But we want happy, healthy mushers as well. So people know what they're getting into, but we have a vet team that makes sure that the conditions are not too unfavorable to run. And we also have a very serious group of people that take this race seriously. So obviously weather is always taken into consideration. But I will tell you, the vibe last year was it was cold. It was very cold. I've been involved in the past 5 Copper Dog races, and last year was definitely the coldest one.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Kim PC from the Copper Dog 150. What kind of the training do the dogs go through? How much time is there between the race and the training? Like, how many months prior?
Well, I think that depends on the musher. Okay. I think most mushers, and I am not a musher, and this is definitely out of my realm, but I have talked to a lot of mushers and babysat some dogs for some local mushers. But mushers need to run weather-dependent. Dogs need to run weather-dependent. You are obviously not going to be running dogs on a four-wheeler in 80-degree weather in the middle of the summer.
So it's definitely
weather-dependent. But once the fall comes and the weather cooler temperatures start dropping below 65 and 60 and 55, mushers are out there running their dogs with ATVs on trails without snow. Now, when it gets closer to races, if you're training a team and you don't have any snow, we've had mushers drop out because of that. You know, we had that a couple years ago where I believe it was the Duluth area was not getting a lot of snow and Minnesota was kind of bare. And, you know, if you can't train in the snow, it does affect whether you're going to run a race or not.
Let's get into the volunteers, because it's a really big part of the race. Roughly, I mean, you don't have to give me an exact number, but how many people are we talking here that are involved with putting this race together?
Well, we've been having a lot of conversations about volunteers lately. We always do, but I would say between the 3 days, we have close to 400, 425 volunteers. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that is probably not counting a lot of the core team people. That is people on the website volunteering for crossings, volunteering to come dog handle, you know, volunteering to assist our vets. It tops out pretty much. I mean, 75% of our volunteers, or 78%, I think, are on Friday night because we have so many road crossings and it's at night.
Yeah,
that is the most important thing. As I mentioned, our race and our organization is all about keeping people safe.
Is there a position that it takes more getting a hold of? Like, there's maybe a little bit more time spent on getting the people prepared for a position?
I definitely think one of the positions that people really need to come and try out before they volunteer is a dog handler. I got involved in the Copper Dog because I love dogs.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it is extremely hard work. So if you're thinking, wow, I'm going to come hang with some dogs and you've got some lower back problems, or you should probably take a quick look at that. And that's some of the purposes of why we train our volunteers. And we have dog teams at our all-volunteer training to make sure that, hey, you want to come learn how to handle a dog team? We have one that you can work on. So.
I've seen even the people who have always been involved, they even have sometimes trouble with the dogs and holding, and because it's about 8 dogs, and you know they might look, you know, really weak, and so they might look like that, but they are, you know, very strong. So in terms of the positions, it's what are some of the other common positions that are available?
One of the major positions, I think, and in fact I just talked to someone today that was discussing this, one of the biggest positions that we need filled and that we really take seriously is our road crossings. We have people sign up for crossings. I think we have, I can't even tell you the number right off the top of my head, but we have many, many road crossings in the middle of, at nighttime. And that's our biggest fear. We want to make sure that everybody's safe. The drivers on the highway, we want to make sure the dogs are safe, the mushers are safe, our volunteers are safe. So those are the jobs that we post and we want to make sure we have filled. But I will tell you, one of the other jobs that we really need help on is set up on Friday morning. we have to put that snow fence in mm-hmm. all the way down Fifth Street, and that is a big job, and many hands make light work. So that's another job that we really push and stress and put out there to the community. You know what? We have fraternities involved, and those are perfect jobs for groups or church groups to go ahead, sign up, come work for a couple hours, and it's really rewarding.
Oh, and one of the training sessions happened earlier this month, but there is one coming up on the 14th. What would you tell people? What happens during these training sessions? What are they? What should they expect?
The second training session that we're having that you're speaking of that happens on Valentine's Day actually is what we've called our lead volunteer training, and we've started that the past couple of years. And this is for people that are. Really looking at the copper dog and saying, you know what, I've come to a crossing, I've done a little dog handling, I'd like to get a little bit more involved, and maybe I'd like to head up a crossing, and maybe I'd like to be responsible for a road crossing, or maybe I'd like to be responsible for a team of people and help them learn how to handle dogs. We teach them about road crossings. We teach them about timing. It's real important. We, at our road crossings, we have someone who is what we call a spotter both by the road and a spotter on the trail. And one of the things that we also do is each crossing has a log, and you keep track of what time that musher comes through your crossing, how many dogs are on the ground, and the musher's bib number. And the reason we do that is not just for our timing stats, but the reason we do that is to make sure we've got everybody accounted for.
So I asked you earlier about changes in the course, possibly, I guess, in terms of the positions. Has there ever been talk about adding more positions?
Adding more positions as far as more trails?
More volunteer positions.
Absolutely, and we look at that every year, but I will tell you, there are some spots, and one that comes off the top of my head is we go through Lake Linden the first night during the first stretch. Mm-hmm. All the teams go through Lake Linden on the Trap Rock Valley Road / bridge, people call that. That's a real, it's an exciting crossing because there's a lot of room for spectators.
Yeah.
But it also can be a little nerve-wracking because we're part on the road. We have the law enforcement and the fire departments all involved with that. But one of the things is, the first couple of years we ran that, we used volunteers. And you have to remember that dogs get spooked.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And we did some training, and we probably didn't kind of look at how we did that, and so we talked to the mushers. One of the things that we do after the race is we have a musher wrap up. We get feedback from the mushers, mm-hmm. both positive and negative. And one of the things they said is, you know what, we love your volunteers. We think it's fantastic what these communities do, but there's some parts of the race where you could probably use just a little less volunteers and a little more snow fence. Put some snow fence up, keep the dogs in line for safety reasons, for safety for the dogs, and it's worked out well. It's worked out well. And the good thing is there's still plenty of room for spectators, and that's what we want. We want people to be able to come and see the dogs.
Do you get volunteers that it seems like they're almost involved with it every year? It's just the same. They always come back.
Absolutely. I just had a conversation with someone today who her and her group have been involved at what we call the Eagle Harbor Cutoff. And they just told me that they have T-shirts being made up this year for mm-hmm. their crossing, which I thought is phenomenal. I told her as soon as they get them, I'm going to take a picture and we'll post it on our website. But absolutely, we have businesses, organizations, groups of family, friends. They park out at these crossings. Friday night, we got bonfires going on. People are cooking hot dogs. It's awesome, the ownership that people take.
And I mean, even for the people who do want to get involved, but maybe they say, you know, they don't want to get out there in the weather, in the cold, there's a way to volunteer in your own home, and that's the Adopt a Musher.
Absolutely. That's another program that they started a couple of years ago, or I should say we started as an organization. One of the things that you'll notice, and you can talk to, if you have the opportunity to talk to mushers, a lot of mushers go to these races, and they're used to sleeping in their cars or their trucks with their dogs. And so what we decided is we've got community, we've got people who have homes, and we have people that are willing to house people. So we opened the Adopt a Musher. It's on our website. And basically what happens is we reach out to the community, and there's some stipulations. We want to know where you live. Yeah. Obviously, if you're in Lawrence, that might be a little bit difficult for you, but mushers have to travel home, and sometimes they don't want to make that trip home on Sunday night. But the main thing is we have people who open their homes and say, you know what, we've got a spare room. We've got a big yard you can park your dog trailer in, and mm-hmm. it's been really successful. And I think the thing that's really cool about it is there's been some really unique friendships formed from it, which is great.
Now, it's not just the race. And like I said, there's the opening ceremonies. But there's some events that go on that even with the kids during that weekend.
Yep, absolutely. And that was one of the things that we wanted to do, especially in our checkpoints, but especially in Calumet. You know, we put this snow road in right down the middle of 5th Street, and we block some access for those local businesses. And those local businesses are, they're our friends, they're our community, they're our vitality. And economically, our race has an impact on them. And we want to make sure that people come down and visit those businesses that have access. They support us, and we couldn't do this race without them. So it's real important to us to hold events in Calumet that people can come up on Saturday. Maybe they can't make it up to Eagle Harbor or Copper mm-hmm. Harbor, but people can come up and say, hey, well, what can I do? Well, we, again, for the second year in a row, we're real proud to announce the doghouse races, and that's on our website. You can go and visit, but we had so much fun last year.
Last year, I was there. There was a great turnout.
And people loved it, and we thought, wow, what an event. But we also have a musher that's coming back again. Her name is Lynn Whitty, and she's actually an elementary teacher from downstate, mm-hmm. and she comes up, and she does some education for the kids. We have face painting, hot dogs and hot chocolate, and lots of fun things. We're just really excited that we can provide some family entertainment for people.
There's so many events. I mean, not so much in the winter, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on. A lot of different, you know, the festivals, and we're just getting finished wrapping up with Winter Carnival. Mm-hmm. What sets the Copper Dog 150 apart from so many things that go on in the Copper Country?
Well, I think we're really fortunate, especially this time of year, and I think that's one of the things that does set it apart. Our race is always the first weekend in March, and I will tell you, that's a lull, boy. We're past Winter Carnival, we're past, you know, holidays, and people are starting into March, and it's making winter long, and we're like, wow. So that's one of the things I think that sets it apart is the timing of it. But I will tell you this, and unless you've come and experienced the race itself, the sport of mushing is got some magic to it. And I think you need to come and see it to experience it. And I think that's the reason why our volunteers keep coming back. I think it's the same reason why people like myself continue to be involved in this organization. It's a community event that I think attracts a caliber of mushers that are both local people that are in our community that we are friends and family with, but it brings people in. And the good thing is these mushers that come, we've already talked to mushers that come back in the summertime and visit, which is what we want. We want community vitality. We want people to come to our area. This is not just a Keweenaw event. Mm-hmm. This is a UP event, and we want people to come up and visit our great community and come back in the summer and see what it's like. And I think I've used this word a lot, but I think the race Friday night, being at a crossing in the middle of the night, watching a dog team come by, there's something magical about it, and you have to come and experience it, and you'll see why.
For those who want to volunteer, What are some of the ways that they can get into contact?
There's a lot of ways you can do it, but one of the easiest ways is to just go on the Copper Dog 150 website. There is a couple of links there that you can go and sign up for. And the good thing is, if you have any problems, every board member for the Copper Dog organization has a contact email there. Every race person, just email somebody if you have trouble. Brian Donnelly is our lead volunteer, actually our volunteer coordinator. And he is constantly helping people and directing them to the right place. So if you get frustrated, please don't give up. If you find that you're not computer savvy, give somebody a call. Reach out to us. We'll be more than happy to get you on the website. And we do have an all-volunteer training that's coming up on the 21st of February. Mm-hmm. And that is at the CLK school up in Calumet, and that's another place. If you show up there, we'll get you volunteered.
Alrighty, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. Kim Pesci, thank you so much for joining me on today's program.
Thank you so much.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at keweenawreport.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Copper Country Today.